mind the somebody said to me there a while ago, you know, when politicians are lying, but the lips are moving. But that's President Trump, the excluder, of course. Isn't it? Our second speaker has done more than a fair share of interviews and letter writing to help our cause. She'll give us some insights of what it was like as a mother over the last year, trying to continue on as normal. So I'd like to introduce it to Stephanie Meehan.
Hi all, and thanks a million for everybody for turning out today. It's a great show of support. My name is Stephanie, my partner's name is Fiacra, and we have two beautiful children, Usheen and Karis. This is our story about Priory Hall. In 2008, the day it arrived, myself and Fiacra, after years of saving, finally received the keys to our first home. We were so excited, finally a foot on the ladder. After years of renting, we couldn't wait to have our own place. We spent hours choosing colour schemes. I drove Fiacra mad, changing my mind a million times, but it was our home. We could choose the colour schemes. We could choose everything, and we reveled in it. We had all the time in the world. Honestly, we couldn't have been any happier. Little did we know what was around the corner. 2011 started as a year full of hope. Fiacra, Usheen and I eagerly anticipated the arrival of our new baby. We spent hours decorating the children's room in preparation for our new addition. Usheen was overwhelmed with excitement. And finally in March, our gorgeous daughter, Karis, arrived. She was such an easy, happy baby. Our lives were complete. We had a fantastic summer. Life was good. We always knew there were problems with Priory Hall from the very beginning, but we always had a positive outlook and hoped for the best. We were always led to believe that although there were problems, they were being rectified, as the builder had been ordered to fix them. Again, we trusted the powers that be. It was only in October 2011, a few days prior to our evacuation, that we realised the severity of our problems. The days leading up to the evacuation still have a sense of unreality about them. What to pack? How long to pack for? Where to go? Lots of questions, but no answers, and no one giving us answers. Where will we eat? Where will we sterilise my baby's bottles? Where will my children sleep? Will they be able to sleep in a strange bed? Where would we live and for how long? My head was in a complete spin. Why was all I could ask? I will never forget that cold, wet Monday when our family arrived at the Regency Hotel. We'd only found out through word of mouth that the residents were to meet there, so we were completely unsure of what to expect. There was complete chaos. Crowds of people with buggies, children, suitcases and boxes filled with their worldly possessions, wandering aimlessly in a state of utter shock, without a home and not knowing where to go. The hotel hadn't been properly informed of our arrival, how many rooms to prepare, how long we would be staying. Again, Dublin City Council failed us. Eventually, we settled into a room, unpacked our children's necessities. I was afraid to unpack everything as we had no idea how long we were going to be staying. I can honestly say I didn't sleep for days. And to compound our already stressful situation, four nights into our already living nightmare, thanks to Dublin City Council's incompetence, we were forced to move yet again. Believe it or not, the council forced us and our children to move hotel yet again so that the hotel could make way for a poker tournament. A week before, we were given 48 hours to pack our things and leave our home. This time, the council gave us 30 minutes to pack up our bags and move our belongings. Try to imagine how confused and upset my son Usheen was to see his mother in tears yet again. In that whole first week, we never spent more than one night in any same room. While the hotel tried to find a more suitable room for a family of four than the single room allocated to us by the Dublin City Council. We tried to keep on a normal existence for the sake of Usheen. Children are very wise, they pick up on everything. We got up every morning, went to work. Usheen went to school, we tried to keep up a routine. The uncertainty was the hardest thing. When could we go home? After a week, the novelty of living in a hotel had worn off for Usheen. All he wanted was his bedroom, his toys, his friends, and that hasn't changed. I found it increasingly difficult to get through the day without breaking down and tried to keep it together in front of Fiacra and the children, but each day I cried. I couldn't understand how we got here, what we were going to do, and how this was affecting my children and my own sanity. Life didn't stand still because we were evacuated, and the mortgage payments still had to be honoured. So each day I would go to work and once again try my hardest not to break down. I longed for that carefree life that we once had and wondered if we'd ever have those days again. It's the little things in life that we take for granted, such as having a postal address for doctors and schools. Where could we get our own post sent to, but most of all not knowing month to month where we would live. Christmas 2011 wasn't a time of celebration for us. It was instead a time of great stress and worry. We just existed. We visited family and went through the motions and pretended to enjoy the festive season. But instead of celebrating, all we could do was worry about where we'd be living the following month. If it wasn't for our children, we would have just pulled the blinds and hoped it would pass quickly. It was the worst Christmas ever. The most distressing part is that we had to reassure our six-year-old son that Santa did know where he lived and he would not be forgotten. February 2012 was a very tough time for our family. Harris contracted pneumonia. We just seemed to be facing battle after battle. I blamed myself partially for bringing her to protest outside the Dáil every Tuesday, through all kinds of weather. But she got through it and has fully recovered, and myself and Fiacra have too. Since we've been evacuated from our homes, the children have reached crucial milestones in their little lives. Oisin is now in first class and is top of his class. Harris, who left Priory Hall, a six-month-old baby, took her first steps in our makeshift home and is now a mischievous toddler. I often wonder where their memories will be of growing up as children. Where will they call their childhood home? Little did we know, a year later we'd still be asking those questions, still wondering when, if ever, will we get to go home, and where our homes will be. For the last 12 months, we've lived month to month, dreading the thoughts of having to pack everything up yet again and to move from the accommodation provided by NAMA. These are apartments and houses, but they are not homes. They are not our homes. A home is where you can hang photos on your wall, where you can decorate our children's rooms to our own taste. A home is where you can know you can stay indefinitely. Priory Hall was our home. But due to the incompetent builder and the incompetent Dublin City Council, Priory Hall will never be our home again. Over the last year, we've spent many sleepless nights tormenting ourselves over what might have happened. We lived on the fourth and fifth floor. It would have made it impossible to escape. Little did we know when we were busily decorating our home for our little baby carers, the danger that surrounded us. Myself and my partner find ourselves under constant stress and strain through no fault of our own. No matter how hard we try to hide it from our children, they still pick up on it. 1 year on, my questions haven't changed, but my concern for my children's future has grown. How can I provide a future for my children if I'm forced to pay a mortgage on a worthless death trap for the next 30 years? This was our first home, a place to raise our family. Is this what we've to be left with? How can we be expected to face another year of uncertainty and continue to live in this situation, which is caused through no fault of our own? Is this the best our government has to offer? An uncertain future, no place to call home. Finally, I would like to say thank God we are all here today. And we're not at an anniversary mass because people could have easily lost their lives due to sheer negligence and fueled by greed. The government and Dublin City Council have failed on all levels to protect the residents of Priory Hall. Thank you. Okay.
I think Oisin deserves a round of applause as well, Robin. Top of the class. Our third speaker will offer insight into our life over the last year also. She's also given up her time when asked and is always ready to help out when needed. I'd like to introduce you to Sinead McConnell.
Here and spoke about Priory Hall. At the time, I hoped that it would be a once-off. The situation we had found ourselves was so dreadful and unjust that surely the government could not ignore it. However, at the back of my mind, doubt crept in and my faith in political power to solve our plight was low. Turns out I was right. Although I did believe that 1 year on, even if the problem was not fully resolved, that we would at least be in a better position. Instead, we are worse off than we were last October. And with interest on our mortgage rising daily, along with our stress levels. And now, here I stand to tell my story once more. It's been a hard year, to say the least. It began with the evacuation, everyone struggling to leave Priory Hall. Favours were called in with anyone that knew a man with a van, and bit by bit we managed to move all our possessions. Some people even removing the solid wooden floors that they'd spent so much of their hard-earned money on. A small lock-up in Finglas is where all my furniture lies waiting. Some days I wonder, will I ever get to sit on that sofa again and relax in a home that I can call my own? After the madness of moving everything, the next struggle was the weekly trips to the High Court. I was lucky to have the home comfort of my parents' house, so unlike many others, I did not have to endure the weeks of living out of a hotel room, for which I am very grateful. The first trip to the Four Courts was pretty surreal. There were photographers and press outside the court, and it was only when they started taking photos of us that I realised they were there because of us. This was big news. The situation we had found ourselves in, through no fault of our own, had grabbed the media's attention. What would happen to us all now? A question we still ask today. So week after week, we went to court to listen to Dublin City Council and Mr. McFeely's lawyers fight it out. I never thought I'd attend the High Court, least of all to listen to a case that directly affects my future. I found it frustrating sitting in silence as they argued about my home and who was responsible. We all sat there powerless to do anything, each of us trying to make eye contact with the judge, pleading with our eyes for him to understand what we were going through and those that had put us in this dire situation. To our relief, Justice Nicholas Kearns was appalled by the way Mr. McFeely had cut corners in the bills, and when the weekly targets set out in court to repair Priory Hall were not met, McFeely was found in breach of that court order. He was sentenced to 3 months in Mountjoy to begin that evening and a €1 million fine. We were all so relieved that someone in a position of authority had acknowledged that McFeely was in part to blame for this shambles. Now we thought it was time to move on and find a solution. I remember feeling relief that phase one was over and the result we wanted had come to fruition. But that joy was short-lived. I planned to go for a drink that night to celebrate the end of long, drawn-out weekly court visits and to toast Justice Kearns for delivering a fair and just judgment. Then, the devastating news came that McFeely had applied to the Supreme Court in order to appeal the sentence. And he was granted leave to appeal. DCC had not turned up to court, and therefore, with no one to argue against the application, it was granted. My heart sank when I heard the news. I was angry with Dublin City Council and frustrated with how powerless I was. I went for that drink anyway, but it was more of a drowning of sorrows. One positive thing that I had come to realise through attending the court with other residents was the strength of my fellow neighbours. We were there to support each other. When one of us hit a low point, others would offer words of encouragement. There was no doubt in my mind that there was a long fight ahead. But I knew I was prepared for the battle, and I wasn't alone. Step one was to get support from the government. So every week at lunchtime, we would bring our protests to Dáil Éireann. We stood in the cold and rain, holding up our banners to passing cars, talking to the press, having our photos taken, and conversing with the few politicians that offered us support. Unfortunately, the number of true political supporters were few, but we were and still are grateful for their support. But we needed more support from government ministers. Our own local representative, Mr. Terence Flanagan, had been present at our Dáil protests. He offered his support and pledged to get us a meeting with the Taoiseach and Minister Hogan. Yet here we are, still waiting. His lack of passion and lack of determination filled me with dread. If this was our only representative in the major government party, then I didn't have much faith. Protesting in the cold I could cope with. But sometimes, just thinking about Priory Hall makes me feel sick to the stomach. It's not easy to cope with constant letdowns from the government and a future that is so unknown. You try to put it to the back of your mind whenever possible. Because we've had to battle against the constant red tape and the government's fear of setting a precedent, it's not often that you can forget, even if it is just for one day. As you know, our weekly Dáil protest didn't get us very far, but just by being there, we felt at least like we were doing something, and the public and media support kept us strong. Along with the protest, we had letter-writing campaigns, and although we were successful in getting the Priory Hall topic raised many times in the Dáil, still nothing changed. Time moved on, and still nothing. So we held another protest in Donaghmeath, which, like today, many people came to support us. Still no action from the government. We all sent along, like so many unhappy Irish citizens, to protest at Fine Gael's Ardèche. Still, no official meeting with the Taoiseach or Minister Hogan was offered. I then had a chat function I knew the Taoiseach would most probably be attending. I grabbed the opportunity in the hope that I might get to speak with him directly. Sure enough, as I sip my tea at the reception, him beside me and compliment my hat, only Enda himself. I thanked him for the compliment and waited until he'd finished greeting those around me. Then I introduced myself properly. We spoke for a few minutes and he listened to my thoughts on Priory Hall. I told him that to repair Priory Hall, in my opinion, wasn't a viable option and that a different solution would have to be found. He seemed to be in total agreement. I was disappointed that he had not inspected Priory Hall personally, as I knew he had recently been in the area. He told me he'd seen it, but hadn't gone into the actual building, as the place wasn't accessible to the public. A feeble excuse, I thought. Surely the most powerful man in the country would have easily been granted access. He told me to keep in touch, and when I asked if we could rely on his support, he guaranteed me that we could. I followed up our meeting with an email that had photos attached, showing the inside of Priory Hall, so he could see the devastation for himself. He never replied. I can't say I was surprised, but it did add to my disappointment, and any hope of government help faded away. Finally, it was time for McFeely's appeal. You think by now we'd be used to bad news, but sitting in the Supreme Court listening to the judges granting his appeal, it was a crippling blow. I wish I was, and continue to be, so angry that the man responsible for building this death trap walks away scot-free. Next time we visit the Supreme Court, which should be soon, the date is yet to be set, it will be Dublin City Council's turn to dig the knife in, as they too appeal the High Court order to pay our accommodation and storage costs. They simply want to wash their hands of us, when they too are responsible for our plight. All I want is my home back, and the possibility to look to the future with hope. Currently, I have no security and no idea what the future might hold. I, like all the residents of Priory Hall, will not give up. We will not give in, and we will definitely not go away.
That was supposed to take 5 weeks. 1 year on, we're still out of our homes. Nothing has been done. 56 people lived for 4 years in a dangerous home. 100 families are now facing mortgages on homes they'll never live in again. And Tom McFeely has walked away from all responsibility. Self-certification doesn't let Dublin City Council off the hook either. They had the powers to inspect Priory Hall at any stage during construction, but they choose not to do so. And the warning signs were there. Priory Hall wasn't the first development Tom McFeely built in Ireland. He's left a trail of dangerous and unfinished homes behind him. Local authorities knew about it. Dublin City Council should have known about it, but they did nothing. In 2006, when Priory Hall was still a building site, the Health and Safety Authority came in to carry out an inspection. They were so worried about what they saw, they went immediately to the High Court and asked for the site to be closed down. A health and safety inspector described it as one of the most unsafe sites he had ever visited. The warning signs were there. Dublin City Council could have inspected, and they chose to do nothing. To add insult to injury, Dublin City Council spent over €5 million of taxpayers' money, of our money, on apartments in Priory Hall. They spent that money and again carried out no inspections. If Dublin City Council had done their job, we wouldn't be standing here today and we wouldn't be in this mess. The council have failed miserably with Priory Hall, and now they want us to carry on the burden for their failures. When the council went to court a year ago, the judge asked them what was going to happen to the residents if they were evacuated. The council shrugged their shoulders and said, "That's not our problem." That's our council, the housing authority, who tried to put families out on the streets. Luckily for us, the judge saw it differently. He ordered the council to provide accommodation for the residents while their homes were being fixed. That was supposed to take 5 weeks. 1 year on, we're still out of our homes. Nothing has been done. The council's response to the judge's order was to drag us through the courts for the last year. They've been in and out of the Supreme Court continuously, trying to take away the only safety net that the residents have, their temporary accommodation. That's the council's solution, to once again try to put families back out on the streets. We haven't asked any politicians to speak today, but I'd like to acknowledge the politicians that have tried to help. local councillors Tom Brabazon, Brian McDowell and Micheál McDonagh, who have done the best that they can at local level. Sean Kenny and Tommy Broom, who have raised Priory Hall continuously in the Dáil. Avril Power, who's done the same in the Shannon. Yet despite this, 1 year on, we're no closer to a solution. We haven't asked any politicians to speak today for one simple reason. We've been failed by the political system. Priory Hall is the worst and most extreme example of modern Ireland. An Ireland where no one is held accountable. An Ireland where the bankers who brought this country to its knees are bailed out by the taxpayers. Bailed out by us. But still these banks demand every last penny from the residents of Priory Hall on homes they can't live in. An Ireland where developers who threw up badly built and dangerous homes throughout the country are handed big six-figure salaries by NAMA, salaries paid for by us. An Ireland where incompetent politicians who pass self-certification, get fat pensions, again, paid for by us. And an Ireland where Dublin City Council, with the approval of Phil Hogan and this government, have made every attempt to walk away from their responsibilities to the residents of Priory Hall. People like the residents are the very ones that this country is depending on. Young, hard-working people. The very people that will help drag this country out of the mess that it's in. Yet this government is happy to stand on the sidelines and watch the residents lose everything. A year on, we still haven't had a meeting with Phil Hogan. Minister Hogan has responsibility for Priory Hall. He may not have been in power when it was built, but he's happy to take the ministerial car, he's happy to take the paycheck, and he needs to take responsibility for his department. The minister has used every excuse in the book not to meet with us. He says he has to respect the independence of Dublin City Council and he can't interfere in individual cases. The minister needs to stop making excuses. He needs to meet and work with the residents to put an end to the problems of Priory Hall. He needs to become part of the solution and to stop being part of the problem. The government knows that Priory Hall was a failure of local authority and a failure of the state, but they refuse to do anything about it. Enda Kenny tells us that he sympathises with us, but when asked for help, he does nothing. Our own government has turned its backs on us. I just want to finish by saying something about the residents. It's been a long and difficult year for everyone. I think we've all shown a lot of patience. My patience is running out. There needs to be a solution to Priory Hall, and there needs to be a solution quickly. Families shouldn't have to endure another year of this. This place behind me needs to be knocked to the ground, and families need to be allowed to move on with their lives. And if we need to, we'll take this crowd to Kilkenny, to Phil Hogan's doorstep. We'll take it to Kilkenny's doorstep in Mayo. Because we will not take the hit for the council's incompetence, for a greedy builder, and for a government that turns its back on its own citizens.
Our final speaker has offered his services from the beginning of the campaign and he's always championed their cause and has offered very good advice on our financial situation. So I'd like to introduce you to David Hall.
Thanks, Darren. They kept the most attractive speaker to last and they told me they needed to buy candy to balance the committee speakers today. That's referring to Graeme, of course, and Darren and Niall. I wouldn't say anything in relation to our female members. I think everyone has very, very eloquently stated the horrific facts that are Priory Hall. There's a mediation process at the moment which everyone is tiptoeing around. If I was a betting man and Paddy Power took a bet, I'd say it's deemed to fail. and unfortunately there are two solutions available for Priory Hall. One is to knock the kip. And in rebuilding it, one thing that will be assured is it probably will be the best built place in the world if Carlsberg did building. Secondly, would be to transfer mortgages from existing properties to new premises. And I think realistically speaking, they're the only two shows in town. And as Sinead quite rightly said, you know, Justice Kearns, one of the early legal people who's supportive of the cause of Priory Hall and stuck his neck out, gave the residents of Priory Hall a life raft. Dublin City Council now want to puncture that life raft. And we need to be very, very clear in relation to where the responsibility currently lies. So today's papers reported a €1.7 million charge as what has cost Dublin City Council to date. It's broken down into the following figures. They have left out a few figures. They break it down that security has cost €690,000. And they're 26. And why they're protecting the rest is beyond me. They should let some fella in. Why don't they let a rave? They should have a rave in the kip and sort it out very quickly. So we'd have an underage rave and let it sort it out overnight and save themselves a fortune. They've paid your luxurious hotel accommodation came to €350,000. Graham ran up a bar tab, I think, of £100. They didn't mention that. They forgot to mention a couple of very important things. And before I criticise one or two people, just to say very clearly that Tom Robinson and Arthur Mullen, both solicitors and their respective legal teams, you know, have done a huge job at a huge cost to them to protect your interests for the last 12 months. And the reason I'm saying that is, and both teams, there's three or four on each team, each headed by a senior counsel. And the reason I'm saying that now is that Dublin City Council have yet to disclose what their legal costs are. They forgot to mention today what the legal costs are when they gave out the rest of the costs. And I guarantee you when those costs become apparent, the true value of what your own legal teams have done will become very, very clear. Then we have the bizarre situation of mortgages. And this is my specialist chosen subject. So all of the banks I've met at this stage, unfortunately, each is delusional as the others. It is important to say in a positive note to the banks, it isn't their fault that McFeely built such a shithole. And I think it's important to say that. One or two of them do remind me of that from time to time, and it is important to say it. So there will be a very, very difficult road ahead in relation to this. Maybe next week might be the time to crystallise the loss that exists at the moment and put for sale signs on every single one of the apartments. And we might buy them for €1 and then notify the bank they've been sold for €1. And that will then crystallise your loss to exactly what it is. The other figure today that was forgotten to mention was that each last calendar 12 months, €1.9 million is the mortgage arrears figure, calculated on £12,000 per month per apartment. So the total bill to date, excluding the legal fees, which you can be damn sure are not Yellow Pack legal fees, stands currently at €3.9 million. To renovate the kip, as it was proposed by Dublin City Council's figures, was €7.4 million. And I think the only realistic solution now, as I mentioned, is transfer the mortgages, knock and rebuild. So I think out of courtesy to the judge and to those involved in the mediation process, everybody is acting exceptionally professionally. However, there's major concerns over the mediation process, and I think we're fooling ourselves if we don't admit that they exist. And therefore, out of courtesy to that process, we let the less number of months go. The campaign will continue, and as a community, as an organisation, as a group, people can only be impressed by what has happened over the last 12 months under dramatic and tragic circumstances. And as dysfunctional as your committee are, they have provided with you with excellent leadership over the last 12 months. And most certainly one thing I won't do is I will never ever fall out with a Priory Hall committee. So thank you.
Thank you, David. Only cheating, isn't it? So I'd like to take this opportunity, as David said, to thank the rest of the members of the Priory Hall Residents Committee. They've worked so hard on behalf of the residents over the last year. Thank you very much for your commitment and sacrifice. Um, Just a massive thank you to you all for turning up today. We know we can really rely on you for your continued support. And remember to keep the pressure on the politicians who come looking for the votes. The question always has to be, what are you doing about Priority Hall? And what's taking you so long to sort it out? We did want to... We always seem to leave us go with doom and gloom on your face, so we found something that we thought you might get a bit of a smile at. It's the original brochure from Priority Hall. I'll just give you a few lines from it and see what you think. So the heading is Contemporary Spacious Living. Between the trimmings and the trappings. Priority Hall is your dream of contemporary style home in a pleasant urban village. Set in real life midway between the trimmings of the city and the trappings of the country. And the Priority Hall development. Priority Hall is an ambitious new development that creates a harmonious link between existing buildings and the surrounding environments in Donaghmede Village. That way Donaghmede Village is, but with its stylish tree-lined boulevard, angular and broad curved sweeps towards the park, that effect is both dynamic and relaxed. Priority Hall offers an instantly authentic connection with the street, with the shop units fronting on the road. That's the end of the way. Yet the apartment units above are set back, offering homeowners a discreet location in which to live. And this nicely contained development has only 188 units. This is my favourite. The exterior is characterised by modular units of different materials, adding depth, variety and warmth to the building and giving the residents a sense of pride in their new look of their home. With its location beside the park, great care has been taken to create a development that complements a natural amenity beside it. The boulevard, which separates the north and south blocks, provides access to the park, and the underground car parking minimises our space above the ground. The Knob of P was never opened, the car park. I think we might have them on the trade description back then anyway, if nothing else. So, folks, finally, we gave out yellow ribbons today to symbolise that we've been away from our homes for 1 year. Would everyone that has one of these ribbons please tie them behind the railings behind us before we leave? This will let people know that we're not gone away. So, thanks for that. And just one final mention that we always seem to forget. I'd like to thank the media for keeping with us and keeping the Priority Hall story alive. They've been great support. And if we can we get the residents to the right hand side of the truck there? They just want to grab some photographs before everyone disperses. So, listen, folks, thank you very much for turning up in such big numbers. We really, really appreciate your support. And we will be in touch because this story's not gone away for another while yet, we feel. So thank you. Thanks a lot.